Welcome to the Parent Advocate Podcast, a show where we celebrate, defend, support, and uplift the voices of the LGBTQIA community. I'm your host, Stephen Chikumba. My pronouns are he, him, and his, and I'm joined by my always amazing co-host, Lisette Trujillo.
Hi, everyone. Lisette here, she, her, ella. The mission of the Parent Advocate Podcast is to elevate conversations and reframe narratives around trans and non-binary youth to help change hearts and minds. Each week, we bring you our take on all things happening from the perspective of two parents of BIPOC transgender kids.
So this is a special T-Dov episode of our show, Lisette.
I'm so excited. We're doing a special Trans Day of Visibility celebration episode.
I'm here for it. So welcome everyone once again to the Parent Advocate Podcast. Let's get started.
Let's do it.
All right, Lisette, we're completely just throwing out the way we do things here, and we're just going to just riff today because there's so much going on that I think we need to have a come to Jesus moment on this podcast.
Our listeners need to understand the political space we're in, and it's just gotten to feel hectic and exhausting, and I'm so excited that we are getting a chance to just talk about what's happening.
So I want to ground us first because I think it's important for people to understand, like, shit is real out here in these streets. I just read that Diamond Brigman, a 36-year-old Black transgender woman, was shot and killed in Houston, Texas. She was standing on the side of the road as a car circled the block several times, and after like a third or fourth time, a man got out of the passenger seat of that car and shot her several times before getting back in the car and driving off. Now, the car was abandoned several miles away. They do not yet know who killed her, but she is yet another victim of senseless violence directed towards transgender people, transgender women in particular. And I say this because just a week ago, I learned that the killer of Aisha Davis, who was killed last year on June 1st, 2023, the first day of Pride Month, she was also shot and killed in a hotel and left to die. Her killer was just arrested. An 18-year-old man was just arrested for her death. And it shocks me that the more things change, the more things stay the same. Aisha Davis was a 36-year-old Black transgender woman. We find ourselves in this cycle of violence and no one seems to want to connect the dots.
Stephen, it's just heartbreaking. I mean, this is the narrative around Black trans women's existence, this idea, not an idea, the reality of violence that trans women face day in and day out. And it's heartbreaking. I don't even really have any words for it. And I think what makes it even harder is that every week we've seen a loss. Every week we've shared posts around another trans community member losing their life to senseless violence. And so it's just really, I can't tell you how sad and heartbreaking. I mean, I can tell you, and I know that you feel it, but I don't really have the language to express the heartbreak and the sadness. And then you add that to anti-trans policy and anti-trans rhetoric that is at an all-time high. And it feels overwhelming. And I can't imagine how that must feel for our kids when they look at the news or open up social media.
It really is a difficult thing. And again, I think people need to hear the names. Next Benedict, Righteous Torrance, Chevy Hill. These people are people's children, people's spouses, people's brothers and sisters and friends and nephews and nieces and cousins and loved ones and bosses and employees. These are people that were part of other people's lives. These are not just randos. These are actual human beings that have stories that are now no longer being told. And we can't just go on like everything is normal. Your children may not be affected by this, but ours are. Our children live under this pall because of what's happening. Like, no one seems to recognize that when you wake up and you find yourself reading about another state passing yet another bill that restricts the ability to have gender-affirming care or use pronouns at school or be outed by your teachers where you can't change your identification. There's so many restrictions on the lives of certain people and not others that it's hard for me to reconcile how people are not like alarmed at what's going on.
It's so interesting. So I was at an event on Saturday. The U of A, the University of Arizona, was doing a Border Narratives Initiative conference. And there was a climate activist, very prominent activist, Latine activists, and was completely unaware when they were given the number of 600 anti-LGBTQ bills. And this at their community were like 600. And it's because it's not being reported enough. It's not being reported enough. It's not seen as an issue that impacts people in a significant way to report on it. But it is a political tactic that is reshaping the way policy is pushed through our courts, our legislative houses, and Senate houses. It's changing the political landscape. And I feel frustrated that, you know, our family, our friends, people in our periphery can't see the connections the way you're seeing it, and then seeing the uptick in violence.
It's uncanny the way people have become so accustomed to just walking around life with blinders on and ignoring the full panoply of things that are happening around them. It's impossible for me to fathom that people are not aware of what's happening in their places of government in these states. It's unfathomable to me that people are unaware that the most legislation that has been proposed last year and this year is around the most marginal people in this country. Trans people make up, and again, I'm going to estimate because the numbers are rough, but 1% of the United States population are trans. Just the smallest portion of people. There's no other set of people that are less represented, unless you now start going into like non-binary versus transgender versus. But the reality is, we're talking about such a small portion of our population that this much attention is being focused on them makes literally no sense. And the fact that people are not paying attention, are not disturbed by the actions of their elected officials to focus so much energy on this versus anything else, anything meaningful to the population, is disturbing to me.
I mean, I get upset because people know more about what's happening on Vanderpump Rules than they do in their own political spheres, which is like really frustrating. It impacts you day in and day out, and it impacts the people around us. And so, yes, everything you're saying, 1,000%.
And that actually brings me to kind of the reason that we decided to kind of change things up and talk just really frankly to our listeners is because we did not choose this path. We didn't decide one day we're going to do a podcast and we're going to talk about issues affecting transgender people because we're the parents of transgender people. We have found ourselves in the unenviable position of having to be out in the forefront to specifically ensure that our children can lead happy, healthy, and productive lives. And more importantly, and I think we really need to dig into this, as a Black man, as a Latina woman, having to talk about our lives, it's because there are not people like us doing what we're doing. When I first found out that my child was transgender, I couldn't find another person of color, another Black family that was going through what we were going through. I felt like an absolute island, and I promised myself that I would not allow another Black family to be in my position. And so I said, I'm going to be visible. I'm going to be vocal, obviously with my child's permission, because again, it's not my life. It's his life that we're talking about. But if there's a chance that I can at least provide some guidance and support for one other family, then we've done a good thing. And I'm sure your reason is somewhat similar.
I mean, yeah, it was very much similar. I had a friend tell me that, not to tell anyone because I was the only one in our state. And I was like, is that real? Am I really the only one in the state?
And what kind of advice is that? You know what I mean?
I
Like,
don't know how I was
what
like,
advice is
what's
that?
going on? Oh gosh, we're really at a deficit. But also too, I think having been, you know, first gen married to an immigrant who was waiting on his, you know, citizenship, Daniel was so much farther behind in political protections.
Right,
The
absolutely.
second that we were like, we're supporting him. The second that I said, Daniel, of course, mom and dad love you and we're going to support you, I was deeply aware of how disenfranchised he was from that moment on. And I know you felt that too.
I felt like, what is happening? Like, what's going on? And I didn't have the benefit of knowing anything about just, I'm not even going to say trans people, about the LGBTQ plus community at large. I didn't recognize, because I was part of the problem, how bad things were for the community. I was completely unaware. And because I was completely unaware, I was, you know, blithely ignorant to what they faced. And now that I have taken the time to educate myself, I'm like, oh my God, I can't not be out here. I can't not be an advocate. I can't not be an activist. I can't not stand in the breach because there's so much hate and vitriol directed toward this community that somebody has to protect them. Somebody has to do it. And I think you and I were built for it. And if we're not, then we're learning to be built for it because somebody has to do it. Absolutely.
No, you're completely right. It felt like irresponsible to let Daniel face the world alone. You know, like, no, I'm going to figure out the school. I'm going to figure out a doctor. I'm going to figure these things out for you because you're an 8-year-old who needs the love and support of your parents. And now that he's 16 and, you know, more self-reliant, I still feel like it's inappropriate for me to step away in this moment. We need families, we need allies, we need neighbors, we need everyone to stand up in this moment and help us try to stop this like evil political wind that's flying in our direction, you know? And it's not just about our trans kids. Like, how is it that we're at the peak of anti-immigrant rhetoric in this moment, that we're seeing DEIA, you know, programs slashed across the country? Like, it is all connected.
It's all connected. It's all intentional. It is all part of a master plan by white nationalists. You know, the tentacles of white supremacy reach deep into the consciousness of this country. And people are all like, oh, you know, you see conspiracies everywhere. No, we actually have the receipts and we have been doing the work. I laugh oftentimes when, you know, people come into my comment section on TikTok to say something ignorant and stupid, like, oh, you need to watch the Trans Train, this documentary in Sweden, and see all the things that they're doing, and all these people who transitioned 10 years, and all the damage that hormone therapies are being doing. And you know, you don't understand that it's big pharma that's put. Okay, let's talk about that because I actually will do the research and I will look stuff up and I will be able to look stuff up and come back and have a conversation with you where you're not going to. But it's like, okay, if Big Pharma was in fact looking to make money off of hormone therapies, then they wouldn't be focused on testosterone and estradiol. They would be focused on Botox. They'd be focused on the things that actually make them money, okay? Because Botox last year made the pharmaceutical industry like $2.4 billion. And all of testosterone, and again, testosterone is not something that is solely being utilized by trans men. Cis men with low testosterone, 3 to 4% of men in the United States of America are on hormone therapy, hormone replacement therapy for testosterone. That is where the little bit of money being made on testosterone is coming from. It's not coming from the 16% of transgender youth who are on hormone therapy. 16%. I didn't say 16%. 16% of transgender youth. It's not even all of them. So people have this impression that the pharmaceutical industry is doing something that it's not. Most of what trans people are looking for is acceptance. Acceptance comes from social transition. It comes from family acceptance. It comes from community acceptance. It doesn't come from hormone replacement, puberty blockers, surgeries. It doesn't come from those places. And people conflate being trans as some sort of surgical or medical intervention. And that's not what it is at all. But you can't tell people who are listening to the right, Alliance Defending Freedom, Moms for Liberty, and all of these nut jobs, as opposed to the American Medical Association, the Endocrine Society, the American Pediatric Association, the people who are actually providing services to our children and to trans people and non-binary people.
I always think it's crazy that people who are not connected to someone care so fucking much. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Like, why do
that
you
part.
care about other people's access to care in their bodies? Like, what does it do to you? How is it that you're up at night worried about it? You know, I want to know why they care.
It doesn't matter.
Nobody tells me shit about the Botox and the filler in my face. I just don't understand it. It's so frustrating.
Yeah. So we got a lot to talk about. We've been kind of getting into just the ways in which the right has been trying to fuck shit up for all of us. But I think you've got some really specific ways in which the right's trying to fuck with you and your home state. So let's talk about it.
Stephen, let's talk about the evil, vile Stephen Miller and America First Legal.
I'm embarrassed that we share a name.
I mean, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. But Stephen Miller is just an evil, evil, evil human being. Not only did he create child separation along the border, he spent all of the election cycle, was it 2 years ago, investing in states like Arizona, Texas, Florida, Georgia, Colorado, investing in our states to misinform Spanish-speaking immigrant and Black communities on the harms of transgender youth being supported in their homes. Jose and I each got Spanish-written flyers filled with medical misinformation around what gender-affirming care looked like. He spent almost $500,000 in Spanish-speaking ads. And now, today, the New York Times published an article stating that he has sued a Mesa, has sued the Mesa School District for gender-inclusive policy. It's deeply frustrating. I cannot tell you how much I hate this person.
So I read that article and I was like, what's happening? Stephen Miller is not an attorney. So the fact that he has this essentially boutique law firm filing all of these, like they filed over 100 lawsuits so far since their inception, created right after Trump lost the election, and they're trying to push an agenda and really set the table for a second Trump presidency. So if people are not familiar with Project 2025, get familiar. Get familiar for the ways in which we are going from a, Democratic Republic to a banana republic, because that's what's about to happen. All the rights and liberties you think you have are about to be stripped away if this fool is reelected, because things like this, these class action lawsuits against multiple states, multiple employers for doing things that protect the rights of each and every individual under the guise of what? I can't even fathom how people don't see. And again, white nationalists, white supremacy is an enemy to all of us, to all of us. And I'm not saying it like some, uber bigoted Black person, because I could care less. I just know my history and I know the facts. And so if you're not paying attention, if you're not connecting the dots as we are, as we try to do every single time we get on these airwaves to show you what's going on, you will find yourself in the unenviable position of being unprepared when they come for you.
That hurts, Stephen. I mean, the fact that Stephen Miller sees America First Legal as the conservative answer to the ACLU just tells you that he is funded and prepared to push back on any progress we make. And, Mitch McConnell made sure to pack the courts in a way that could make the efforts of Stephen Miller and America First Legal possible. And so it's a terrifying moment for all of us.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, in light of what's happening in Arizona, Texas, Florida, in so many other states, it is no wonder that the article that I read this morning in Scientific American about families that have been leaving state after state after state trying to find safe haven for their families is a thing, because we operate under this misconception that there are safe states, so-called safe states in this country. But this article kind of exposes the fallacy in that thinking, because even in places where you think Massachusetts, that's a really super blue state, Democratic stronghold.
That has transgender protections.
Affirmative transgender protections. It's not just like they don't have any anti-trans laws on the books. They actually have trans affirmative laws on the books. And yet you find families that are still suffering from harassment, bullying, discrimination, bias in places that are
Violence.
supposed to be safe, violence in places that are supposed to be safe. And so I think it's incumbent upon us to let people know silence is complicity. If you are sitting back doing nothing, you're part of the problem. It's not enough to not harbor any anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ animus. It's not enough, because there are people who are actively going out of their way, going out of their way to harm members of the LGBTQ plus community. We just talked about it on our last episode about a man that was shot and killed in a dog park because he was gay. And his killer was like, "You filth, I'm gonna kill you." Like, people aren't always gonna be that explicit, but when they are, so that people know what we're talking about. The article is called Families Find Ways to Protect Their LGBTQ Kids. And it's about the hostility towards children, LGBTQ plus children in particular, that has been essentially enshrined in all of these new bills that are really affecting the quality of life and the mental health of children and their families. We are not talking about some esoteric harm. harm. We are talking about direct harm. Next Benedict was the victim of direct harm directly related to policies that were enshrined in law in Oklahoma because of the bathroom bill. This child who was formerly not having problems in the bathroom was forced to use the girls' bathroom where they were then being harassed, bullied, and ultimately beaten. And whether you agree with the autopsy report or not, there is a direct connection between the bullying, harassment, and beating and their loss of life, period. Doesn't matter how you slice it. And this story of Next Benedict is a story that will be, unfortunately, the end for other children because people have taken license to take matters into their own hands and exact whatever form of violence they feel is warranted. And that's a fact. This Scientific American article talks about the real violence that children are suffering. If Next Benedict wasn't enough, then how about Diamond Brigham? How about Torrance Hill? How about Aisha Davis? How about any of the number of transgender or non-binary people who have been the victims of violence because of this rhetoric?
Their house was shot up in Massachusetts because they were a parent, supportive parents of a trans kid. Imagine that. I mean, look. We know that this level of violence has existed under white supremacist rule in southern states always, right? Like, we know about sunset towns. We know about, you know, the harms in the South and the Southwest, violence enacted on bodies of color and communities of color and immigrant communities. This is not new, but to see it targeted so broadly and openly now on families who are just supporting their trans kids, it's heartbreaking that people still are too afraid to speak up. I mean, this is why we've talked about speaking up being so important. It is not normal. People glorify civil rights movements. Oh, how brave they are. Oh, how wonderful. It is not normal for us to be moving backwards towards freedom and equality. It is not normal that my child has to be visible in this very distinct way, or that your child. It is not normal that the first time my child ever testified at the Senate in our state capitol was when he was 9 and he's now 16 and having had to fight anti-trans legislation every step of the way, every year. When people tell us, are you excited for the new year? Fuck no, because the new year means legislative session is open for 100 days. No.
It's not normal that children are in the halls of Congress, whether we're talking about the federal halls of Congress or state halls. It's not normal for them to be testifying in Congress at all. They should be at school. They should be at recess. They should be taking music classes. They should be playing with their friends. They should be vegging out on video games or eating snacks or just doing nothing. They certainly shouldn't be in a chamber full of adults, hostile, hateful, bigoted adults, trying to get them to see the humanity in them. It is dystopian at best. And yet here we are. Here we are with people like Representative Woods calling our children filth. I wish a nigga would. I really wish. It's like there's so much of this cowardice going on because you never hear them talk that shit to any person's face. They'll do it from the safety of their chamber seat all the way across where there's no likelihood of them coming to harm. But you won't see that shit on the street. You won't see them talk that way to an actual parent face to face. They'll obfuscate and they'll deflect, but they'll never say those things to our faces, which is why we have to be vocal, which is why we have to be present, which is why we have to show up in numbers the way we do. Even though oftentimes it doesn't make a difference, we've got to show up. We've got to let them know that, no, not on my watch. And we got to vote them out of office.
And to families, to white families who are supportive of their trans youth listening to this podcast, violence against children of color has always existed throughout every movement. And we have seen youth movements arise from these communities of color to push for progress. And it's time that we as parents have some political bravery and step into this moment. And we're seeing some do that. And we're seeing a lot of parents saying, no, 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 no. We're going to push assimilation tactics. We're going to use these things that keep only a few of us safe, but not everyone safe. And so if we're going to really see change, if we're going to really see safety for our children, we need to exist in a world where their visibility can can be acceptable, right? Where their visibility is not a worry if they're visible that they're going to be inflicted with violence, right? This is why we celebrate Trans Day of Visibility. It means that trans people are existent and present and alive in their spaces and in their communities and with their families. I can't even say this correctly. And I'm probably going to like in my mind be like, I should have said it differently. But I'm so frustrated by this moment. And I worry every day about Hobbs and Daniel and all of the kids in our sphere. And I think about how violence, while for some people may seem unfathomable, for our people, it's not new and a reality. And it's terrifying.
It really is. It's bothersome to me that folks don't see it. It's bothersome to me that, you know, folks will argue about things they have little to no actual knowledge about, little to no lived experience with. And I don't understand how you can argue about something that you're completely ignorant on. We talk about this all the time. Your opinions are not fact. And as strongly as you hold an opinion doesn't change the fact that you don't know what you're talking about. And when you're talking to somebody with lived experience who's actually going through the things that you are ideating on, that your thoughts and opinions don't matter. They're not significant. They're meaningless. And so stop. Just stop while you're behind, because you're not doing yourself any good and you're doing the LGBTQ plus community an absolute disservice. An absolute disservice.
There's just right and wrong. And in this moment, hatred. In all moments, what am I saying? In this moment, there's just right and wrong. If you hate people, if you hate a specific type of people, that's a bias. That's discriminatory. That's just wrong. And the fact that people keep arguing about it and keep saying, no, it's my, everyone's entitled to their opinion. No, I'm tired of that shit. I'm tired of people thinking, an opinion is, I don't like skinny jeans. That's an opinion. It's not demonizing a whole population of people.
And I think that people don't recognize the ways in which their stated opinion ends up doing harm. I don't think they recognize, especially when we're talking about people with platforms. You know, I've done TikToks about Carlos Santana and Neo and Young Jock and all of these people who have platforms that say things that are transphobic. Like, yeah, you call yourself an ally of the LGBTQ plus community, but that doesn't make it so. An ally doesn't self-proclaim. And so just because you say you're an ally doesn't mean you're an ally. And then when you say things that belie your allyship, that's the truth. Like, I don't judge you by things you say. I judge you by things you do. And if you do things that are transphobic, you are doing things that are transphobic. And if you double and triple down on your transphobia, then you're not an ally. And the problem is that people take these public figures and the things they say to heart, and they give them far more credence and credibility than they should. I'm sorry, Neo, for all the children he has, doesn't have one that identifies as a member of the LGBTQ plus community. And so his opinion as to what he would or wouldn't do if his child did or didn't is meaningless, because none of them have. And they probably never will, considering they know the stance that their father has about members of the community. So I don't care what Leo thinks about this and whether my parenting is good, because he hasn't walked a foot, a centimeter in my shoes. So he can fuck all the way off. And every single person who aligns themselves with the Neo or the Young Jucks or the Santanas or any of these other assholes out here co-signing the opinion of some jackass because they're Santana and they can have their own opinion, you can also fuck all the way off. All you are doing is creating more harm for my child, and I am not going to stand for it. I'm just
not. And had we been alive in a different time period, we would be treated the same ways in which our children are being politicized in this moment.
Absolutely.
And we're not that far from that moment. Santana is not that far from where he was an immigrant kid in this country, right?
And yet, you know, Neo, Young Jack, you all would have been entering all of the places that you entertain from the back door. You wouldn't have been permitted to sleep in the hotels and the motels and these posh establishments that you're performing in. You wouldn't have been paid the amounts that you're being paid. You would have been a boy, referred to as a boy by people, by children. And yet here you are demonizing, casting aspersions toward members of marginal communities, even as a member of one. It's insane. The cognitive dissonance that people demonstrate is insane.
Yeah. I do want to say, because we went on a mad tangent. We were like, mad at everyone.
But we said we was going to have this episode.
I know, we did.
Up to Jesus moments.
We said this. But I do think it's really important for our listeners who maybe are new to the journey in supporting their trans youth, who feel afraid by all the things we just said. The one thing that I hold on to every day is Daniel, when Daniel tells lawmakers, "I'm proof that loving and affirming someone works." And
Absolutely.
it's true. Like, look at Hobbes. He is so, and look, I don't want to push a merit-based, narrative, right? That our kids have to be doing well and high achievers. But our kids are high achievers and
Talk
they
about it.
are doing well.
Talk about it.
And I think that, when I get pushback from other parents or, I think about, even though our children face online bullshit sometimes if we do something very visible, right? The pride and the understanding that they are loved fully and that they are supported and that they have a place to fall if the world feels hard propels them further forward in a way that wouldn't be the case where if we weren't the type of parents that were loving and affirming them.
Absolutely. I think this show does one thing, if it does nothing else. It shows parents of transgender and gender non-conforming children how to love your children unconditionally, unreservedly, with every sinew in your body, because that's what it takes. And, I have cis children that get the same exact love as my trans child does. Why would it be different? And so why should the world treat my children any differently? They're just children. They're just human beings. They're just people. They're just people. And so the fact that we're having a discussion about how to treat other people based on how they identify, again, is bananas to me. It's bananas to me. Like, what difference does it make? Seriously, what difference does it make? All of these boogeymen that white cishet men have created for all of you to be afraid of. It is the white cishet men that you should be afraid of. When you look at the serial killers, the rapists, the child pornographers, the traffickers, all of the deviants in society, 99.9% of them are white men. Those are the people you should be afraid of, not our children. Like, give me a break. Give me a break. When was the last time a black transgender woman was out here committing serial murders? That doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. There is an attorney, a trans attorney, who has been tracking crimes against children in the United States since February of last year. And of the 7,000 plus crimes against children that have been recorded by law enforcement, four or five were committed by trans people. The vast majority of them were committed by people in religious orders, either ordained religious people or people that work in the religious industry. Second highest, police officers. Third, politicians. So we're talking about, again, white men, predominantly white men. And so
In power.
people don't want to look at the facts. They don't want to face facts, but they want to just go with this party line of, oh, it's these trans people, it's these drag queens. Like, I'm sorry, drag queens want to educate your children and show them a good time. That's it. Ain't nobody interested in your kid except for white cishet men. That's who you should be afraid of. So, you know.
In positions of power, right? Because that is, I think that's what people don't understand. Like, I remember having a conversation with a principal around consent. One of the kids had said something awful, and she was like, "I can't talk about this subject." And I was like, "This is not about sex. This is about consent. Teaching young children to discern the difference between somebody harming them and say and being and having the autonomy and the and feeling empowered enough to say, I do not, please do not touch me, do not hug me, do not push me," whatever it is that little kids are doing to each other, when they're like being rough on the playground. And I think that what is at the core of all sexual violence, of all violent acts that committed against anyone, there has to, it is about power, positions of power and authority that want to inflict harm and violence. And I think that when you're demonizing an entire marginalized group that's different from you, you're deflecting from the fact that you chose a power position to be able to harm people and to gatekeep whatever, or whomever may have access to that power, to that position in society, right? But now we have gone too far, Stephen, down the rabbit hole. And so we gotta round it out. We gotta end this special, what we said was gonna be a short episode and is now, a longer episode.
So
We gotta round it out.
I think that the takeaway from today's episode is that notwithstanding all the fuckery that exists in this world, in this country, in our respective states, that children, trans children, gender non-conforming, gender expansive children who are raised in supportive families thrive and live happy, healthy, healthy, productive lives.
We
Go
need
ahead.
our families, our friends, our neighbors to join in and help us stop anti-trans or anti-LGBTQIA legislation. It impacts us all. Let's create a more inclusive and better world.
Where trans joy is the order of the day.
I love that.
So before we go any further, let's end on that note.
I'm with it.
I'd like to thank my co-host, Lisette Trujillo, for indulging me in this T-Dob special. And I'd like to thank all of you for joining us on the Parent Advocate Podcast. See you next time.
Goodbye.
If you're thinking about harming yourself, get immediate support. Please reach out to the Trevor Project and connect to a crisis counselor 24/7, 365 days a year from anywhere in the United States. It's 100% confidential and 100% free. You can get help at thetrevorproject.org. If you'd like to support any of the organizations working actively to support LGBTQ people, please visit the ACLU at action.aclu.org or the Human Rights Campaign at hrc.org.
You've been listening to the Parent Advocate Podcast. Tune in again for another episode.